Thank you for tuning in to the Essential Church Podcast, a church where we focus on restoration over denomination. If you're in the Virginia Beach area and would like to find out more about Essential Church, visit our webpage at essentialchurch.com.
Mr. Soloway, I'd like to ask how this whole mess got started.
I was a happy man back then. When I look back, I can't tell you what happened.
Why don't you tell me how it began?
You guys here on vacation?
Certainly are.
Well, welcome to the end of the world.
Allison, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Noah, by the way. Allison?
You found me. Why don't you
I can't stop thinking about you.
That's sweet.
It's not sweet, it's a problem. I've never cheated on Ellen.
You ever cheated on your husband?
No. Do you have a secret, Detective? One you don't even want to tell yourself? I think you do. I think everybody does.
Bits and pieces of it here and there, and it does a really good job of sort of capturing the excitement and the allure of an affair, but then it also does equally a good job of sort of capturing the just utter destruction and train wreck that results afterwards. And just the lives are a mess, it shatters families, shatters relationships, shatters pride and honor and respect. Everything is just left as desolate waste field. As it goes on. And I don't really know where the show ends. I just watch bits and pieces of it here and there. It's not really a wholesome show, as you can imagine, with the title of it. But it describes what it is we're going to be talking about this morning. In this series, we've been talking about how we need a revolution when it comes to our intimacy and sexuality and marriage. Because where there is no revelation from God, the people will cast off restraint, Proverbs 29:18 says. Another version says, where there's no vision, perish. So I think that's typically what you see when it comes to relationships, is that we've cast off all restraint and relationships are dying and marriages are dying because of what happens in this area of our life. And so we got to find some way to get things back to good, to where God wanted them to be. And so it's said in Hebrews chapter 13 that the marriage bed should be kept sacred, that marriage should be honored by all. I'm talking about how that's sort of like this picture, this circle of sanctity around the marriage bed. This is a place of holiness and oneness, and what God has ordained to go on here is wonderful and beautiful. And it's so often we think of what happens here as there's got to be something sinful involved in it. But really, what happens in here, when it's pure between the two, is amazing and it is blessed by God. However, when somebody's pushed out of the circle, that is not good. When somebody deliberately stays outside of the circle, that is not good. So we've been talking about that over these past 2 weeks. And so we're going to continue on that, picking back up with what Jesus said in Matthew chapter 5, verse 26 and verse 27 and 28. He says, you've heard it said, do not commit adultery. And anybody know where it is that you would have heard that being said? Ten Commandments, right. The Ten Commandments. It says, you heard it said, as in the Ten Commandments, do not commit adultery. He says, but I tell you, anybody who looks at a woman lustfully has already committed adultery with her in his heart. And the same principle that Jesus is getting at is the same principle I learned many years ago in the business world. And that is the principle of success. And it's been said, you know, when people look at success, they think, wow, and all of a sudden, you know, it just, everything worked out. No. Success is never a result of all of a sudden. Success is the result of many good decisions. Success is the result of a lot of research. Success is a result of a lot of hard work. And when you have all this research and good decisions and tenacity put into it, eventually you will find that you find success because of it. At the same time, nobody fails all of a sudden. It's not like as if somebody just woke up one day and everything went away. In reality, once you look deeper, deeper at the picture, deeper at the problem, what you'll see is that there were things that were overlooked. There was training that wasn't done. There was assignments that were missed. And all of those things built up, and all of a sudden you realized it was a failure. But failure wasn't all of a sudden any more than success is all of a sudden. In the same way, so often one of the hallmarks of sexual sin is people want to make it out like, and all of a sudden this happened. No, it wasn't all of a sudden. There were some things that were cultivated there. In the same way, you might look at somebody who has a great marriage and you think, oh, it just happens that way. No, nothing happens all of a sudden. Either things are very bad and all of a sudden you realize it, or things are going really, really good and all of a sudden you realize it. And so that's the same nature of sexual sin. When you get into the Bible, a lot is said about adultery. It's not just a 21st century issue or problem, even though studies now say that about one-third of marriages will deal with adultery between the time that they first say, I do, and the time till death or whatever else do they part. That one-third of marriages will be struggling or dealing with this in some way or another. And it's funny, on the one hand, I remember hearing that stat when I was first going into ministry, thinking to myself, wow, I can't believe it's that many. Now, after many years in ministry, I buy the statistic wholeheartedly because I've seen it before my eyes and had enough conversations with it. But also, once you begin to look at the patterns of how society is and what we program into our minds, I'm almost surprised that it's as low as it is, honestly. That's what we'll be looking at this morning. The book of Proverbs, it was a book that was originally written for the training of young adults. Primarily, their schooling was for young men, and so you'll notice that most of the analogies or descriptions are using male pronouns in there of who he's talking to. But you can take the pronouns out. They're really interchangeable when you look at the principles of the wisdom. And so this is a great book if you want to raise up young boys or young women to go through some of the lessons of the book of Proverbs. And I find it interesting that he spends at least about almost three, maybe four chapters just focused on adultery. Isn't that interesting? 3,000 years ago, that was the topic of the day. That he's been three chapters. I mean, 10% of the book is devoted just to this topic because it's one that continues to be an issue through all times. And so as he's going through it in chapters 4, 5, 6, and 7, mostly in chapters 5, 6, and 7, I want to start in chapter 7 because in chapter 7, it gives you sort of a case study. And then we'll go back and look at some of his wisdom principles in the earlier chapters. But in chapter 7, he tells this little narrative, a little parable of how this plays out in the real world. He says, this one day, this is Proverbs chapter 7, verses 6 and 7. He says, one day I was over at my window, and I noticed out amongst all the naive young men. Now, to begin with, who's naive? Anybody here naive? When it comes to your sexuality and what you're tempted by, you are naive. Trust me, you are naive. I always say it this way. If David, who wrote most of the book of Psalms, had that kind of a prayer life with God, a kind of a relationship with God I will never know in my entire life, probably, if he could commit adultery, who am I to say, nope, wouldn't happen to me? If you don't think it could happen to you, you're the naive guy. Okay? You are naive. You're in that category already. If you don't think it happened to you, you're naive enough to believe it couldn't happen to you. So it says, I noticed among the naive, I noticed this one who really lacked judgment. And so there he was, going down her street at the twilight as darkness fell upon the earth. Now, who is he? He's the wrong guy in the wrong place at the wrong time. That's how the story starts. You know, you've seen this whole thing. And it says, and there she was. She approaches him. She's dressed seductively with sly heart. With brash words, the rebellious type, she comes out, but she never stays at home. She's always out in the streets, a marketplace, soliciting at every corner. Like I said last week, it comes looking for you. You don't have to go looking for a bad decision. Bad decisions come looking for you. And so here she is. She threw her arms around him and kissed him. And with a brazen look, she said, I've just made a peace offering. I've just fulfilled my vows. And you're the one I'm looking for. I came out here to find you, and here you are. What she's basically saying is it's almost sort of a religious sickness here. She says, you know, I just went to church. I took communion. I confessed everything. I've been forgiven. I emptied out my whole bucket of sins. Now I'm ready to fill them up for the week. How about it? And that's sort of the idea, that's the picture here. And sometimes that's really how we see God's grace. Well, where sin increases, God's grace increases all the more. Then let me be a vessel, an example of God's great grace. What do you think? So she says, you're the one I'm looking for. My bed is spread with beautiful blankets, with Egyptian linen. I perfumed my bed with myrrh and aloes and cinnamon. A couple weeks ago I mentioned that myrrh was the scent of seduction and romance. So there you see it once again. She says, come, let's drink our fill of love until the morning. Let us enjoy each other's caresses. In other words, this is going to last all night long. Sure it is. And it says, my husband's out on a long trip. He's taken his wallet. He won't return until later this month. I.e., what happens in Vegas is going to stay in Vegas. Ain't nobody going to find out about this. It's just between you and me. And so she seduces him with the pretty speech and the flattery. And all of a sudden, he follows. Is that how it happened? There it is. All at once, he follows. Like an ox to the slaughter, like a stag caught in a trap, awaiting an arrow to pierce his heart. He was like a bird flying into a snare, little knowing it cost him his life. So listen to me. Pay attention to what I'm trying to tell you. Don't let your heart stray towards that path. Don't wander down that wayward path. For she's become the ruin of many, and many are her victims. Her house is a road to the grave, and her bedroom is a den of death. And preparing for this study, I read a book by Paul David Tripp called Sex and Money, talking about two of the great issues and problems of temptations, all the similarities that the two pitfalls have. And in there, he starts off chapter 3 of his book with a narrative of basically taking Proverbs 7 and putting it into modern terms. And so it's quite lengthy, so I want you to kind of follow along if you can. And I'm going to ask you a question at the end. And the question at the end is going to be, when did all of a sudden happen? I mean, nothing happens all of a sudden, okay? So if you could trace it back, when would you say that was the turning point? That was it. That's when you should have been on alert. That's what led you down this path. That's the question I have for you. So let me begin to tell the story and see if you can follow along and answer that question. He says, this guy was in trouble long before he knew it. As he assessed his life and concluded everything was okay, it really wasn't. You know, he saw himself as a mature Christian, committed family man, diligent worker, but he was running towards disaster without any concern or fear. He had worked with her for years. They were on the same management team and had a lot of meetings together. For almost a decade, their relationship had been strictly business. That is, of course, until the day she asked if she could share a table with them in the lunchroom. You see, that morning had been ridiculously stressful. His children were out of control, and his wife and him were not in a good place. By the time he left for work, everybody was mad at everybody, and his goodbye gesture and kiss was just a dirty look at that point. Well, he must have had the posture still as he left home there later in the workday, because he looked like a beaten man. When she sat down next to him, she didn't talk about business. She simply said, you look like you've been hit with a Mack truck. You have no idea, he responded. Oh, yeah? That's not work, he said. Things are great here. It's home. Sometimes it all just seems impossible. All these complicated relationships, all these people all at once. I can never just seem to turn off the stress before I get here and concentrate on my job so I don't get fired. Well, she says, if you're anything at home like you are here, I'm sure you must be a pretty good husband and father. I'm sure your family's blessed to have you around. She said as she looked at her watch, oh, excuse me, I gotta go. She got up and left. And as she left the lunchroom, he started thinking, wow, that was really nice. This is the most encouragement I've gotten in months. So he went back to work in his busy life and didn't really think much about her for days until they had their first semi-annual monthly executive meeting. And he noticed her in ways he hadn't noticed before. She got his attention in ways other participants hadn't. He tried not to look because he didn't want to make anybody feel uncomfortable, but he couldn't help looking at her. During the meeting, he started thinking about some stuff. He's like, nah, he went back to his desk, started work. Pretty soon, she came and knocked on the door. Hey, is anything less stressful at home? Ugh. He just grunted, and she walked away. As he sat there watching her go, he was completely unaware that something dramatic and important, potentially life-changing, was happening in his heart. He still thought everything was okay. He was in that kind of denial that accompanies these kind of temptations. He told himself, well, nothing's changed. But come on, let's face it, it had. He began to come to work hoping that he would see her. No way to a relationship, whether he didn't entertain any thoughts of having sex, whether get your mind out of the gutter. He just had this heart for her, and he couldn't really describe why. He didn't often eat lunchroom before this point, but now he went there regularly. He told himself it was just to be able to mingle with coworkers, but come on, let's face it, he was looking for her. And whenever he'd see her, they'd end up having lunch together. With each lunch, something was happening in his heart. It seemed like his mate was completely unaware of it. His affectionate compass was increasingly pointing in her direction. He hadn't abandoned his commitment to his wife, and he certainly hadn't entertained any thoughts of leaving his marriage. But his heart had moved, and because it had, it wouldn't be long before his body would move as well. He told himself she was just another colleague, but, you know, she wasn't. He told himself that it was important to develop solid friendships with all of his coworkers. But let's face it, he only had a good relationship with one of his coworkers. Their conversations became more frequent, more planned, more personal. But he still had no sense of danger. And one of the times in the hallway, as they were laughing about something, she reached over and touched his hand casually. He felt a buzz at that moment. the kind of felt kind of feeling he used to have with his wife. She had touched him and he liked it. He wanted her to touch him again. No, he wasn't thinking about sex to get your mind out of the gutter. He just liked being close to her. He liked being physically close. And the heart that he had protected for so long was now searching and was attracted and was hooked. He just didn't realize how hooked it was. Around this time is when his wife became concerned. It wasn't because he was staying late at work, because he wasn't. He was still home at the normal time. It's just that things were odd. He would protect his cell phone. He would get really private. He seemed kind of distant, less communicative. Mornings where things ended in a grumpy look without a kiss were more common now. They hadn't had sex in quite a while, but no big deal. We'd been through these things before. Nothing's as changed, but it kind of had. Meanwhile, back at work, his relationship with the woman had gotten quite physical. No, I don't mean in a sexual sense, get your mind out of the gutter. What I mean is the relationship had become quite tactile. He put his arm around her when he was asking her how she was doing. She would stand next to him so they would touch at the elbow as they were talking in a hallway meeting. He would grab her hand when he was making a point, or they would touch shoes accidentally underneath the table, and then would smile and laugh about it. It was all harmless, wasn't it? No, it wasn't harmless. It was all sexual, highly sexual. He'd committed adultery with her weeks before. He'd shifted his attention and his heart from his wife, now to her. And he was beginning to commit adultery with his body. Everything was acceptable right now, but it wouldn't be long before sex was followed. It was in the stairwell of the parking garage. They were both leaving for the day to say goodbye. She bent over and gave him a kiss on the cheek. He looked around to see if anybody was watching, and he pulled her close and gave her a kiss on the lips. They were embarrassed at the whole thing. But it wouldn't be long before they rented a hotel room, and the disaster they'd been headed towards for a very long time would happen. So now he's sitting in front of me, estranged from his wife, having left his well-paying job, depressed, self-righteous, and confused. He looks at me and says, "She knew I was married. She set me up anyway." It was the same old self-righteous, self-atoning delusion I'd heard many times before. He'd thrown away a wonderful marriage to a really great lady, and his relationship with his three kids was a mess. All for what? He knew what he'd done was wrong, but he still held on to some possibility that he wasn't to blame. Adulterous yet innocent. How does this happen? All right, let's go back to the quiz. When did all of a sudden begin?
Lunch.
When she asked the question, at home. Any others? When he stopped communicating with his wife. Well, actually, there's more to the story. More to the story I haven't told you. You see, more to the story, it begins back when he was 11 years old, and he just happened to click on something on the computer that he never was intended to see, never was even looking for. He just happened to show up there. It's kind of interesting, exciting, if you will. A little while later, a friend of him told him about a link, and it was a similar kind of thing. It was in middle school. He would look from time to time, but it was just kind of an odd fascination. But by his sophomore year of high school, he was hooked on internet pornography. By his junior year, he finally got a girlfriend. They began to pressure her to have sex. Eventually, after a while, they did. And then he began to see if she would do the kind of things that he had seen on the computer screen over and over again. And she would. But then one day, she finally got enough self-respect to say, "No, I'm not going to do that kind of thing." And so they broke up. This pattern continued, relationship after relationship, for the next 10 years. When he was in his mid to late 20s, he all of a sudden met the most amazing girl he'd ever met. On the third date, they had sex, and it was the most amazing night of his life. And he thought to himself, "This is what I've been looking for all of my life." And so their hookup that night eventually led to him move in. And he called up his parents and said, "I found the right one. I found the girl I'm going to marry." Months later, they got married. And things went okay for a season. And then one morning, he didn't give her a kiss goodbye. He just gave her a look. Went to work. Sat down at the cafeteria table. So tell me, when did all of a sudden happen? Was it really at the cafeteria table? No. You see, there was this pattern that started. He wasn't asking to go down that road. It came looking for him. He was 11 years old. He was 12 years old. And then in middle school, and then in high school, this pattern developed, and it went unchecked and went unnoticed, and nobody really thought much about it. And then this dating pattern happened, and it really wasn't a big deal because nothing bad ever really happened. It was just normal. He was just a normal kid growing up with normal relationships. but you see there was a pattern that was developing that was leaving seeds deep within his heart. You see, all of a sudden doesn't typically happen sometime in marriage. All of a sudden happens long before you ever get married. You see, everybody kind of has this thought that I can be however I want the whole time I'm single, and then when I get married, all of a sudden everything's going to change. I'll fall in love, and all of a sudden, all these thoughts and fantasies that I've been watching on the video screen or been reading about from Romance on the Prairies or whatever else it is you read in those romance novels, all these ideas are just going to go away, and we're going to have a normal marriage. It's going to be wonderful. It's going to be great because now we're married. And it's going to fulfill all of my dreams. And it doesn't. One-third of the time, it has an affair attached to it because you don't just all of a sudden become a different person. You don't just all of a sudden change your habits. You don't just all of a sudden change your desires or your expectations and all of a sudden be able to jump into this circle over here and have everything be wonderful and good and be satisfying. Now you see, for years, you've been exploring patterns and ways of living out here and doing things you shouldn't. And you really think just because you put a ring on it and jump in this circle, all of that stuff is going to go away all of a sudden? No. It's just a ticking time bomb waiting to happen. Which is why when the writer of Proverbs is explaining how these things happen, he goes back over to chapter 5 and he says, "Listen, my son, pay attention to my words, turn your ear to words of insight, that you may maintain discretion." Key word there. I want you to maintain discretion. I want you to be able to maintain the ability to know right from wrong. I want you to be able to maintain the ability when that girl sits across from you to know where this is going. This is not a neutral conversation. Taking somebody at work and beginning to having a personal conversation. By the way, anybody know that one-third of these affairs happen with somebody at work? Why? Because if you're not thinking about it and you're not, you know, maintaining discretion at all times, your heart just goes in places it shouldn't. And if it's not at work, it's somewhere else. In 2016, 20% of divorce proceedings had the word Facebook mentioned in them. Isn't that crazy? 20% of divorce proceedings had the word Facebook actually mentioned in them along the way. Why? Because if you're not thinking about it, if you've developed these horrible patterns all of your life, getting married is not all of a sudden going to change everything. So it says you need to maintain discretion from the very beginning and realize this is nowhere I can go. This isn't how I need to be living. And for those of you who are single right now, you're in the best place of all. Because instead of going out there looking for the right spouse, you can become the right spouse and begin to build inside your life a better kind of habits and maintain standards that will lead to the place you need to be in marriage someday. So he says, maintain discretion. Don't go down there. It leads nowhere good. Everything's not what it seems, is what he gets into saying. He's like, listen, her feet are going to take you straight to the grave, just like he said with the example. He says, everything is not as it seems. Everything that is promised, with everything outside of that circle, always ends in the same place, in destruction. Everything outside that circle always ends in the same place. And he says, all right, listen to me. Don't go near the path. Don't go to her house. If you do, you'll lose honor. You'll lose your dignity. Others will feast on your wealth. You'll spend all of your life just to enrich others. At the end of your life, you're going to groan and your flesh is going to cry out, oh, how I hated discipline. How my heart spurned correction. I would not obey my teachers. I would not listen to the instructors. And I was soon in serious trouble. All of a sudden, I found myself in serious trouble, he says, before the assembly of God's people. What he's getting at here is saying, listen, the key to sexual purity is discipline. The key to sexual purity is discipline. You see, because without discipline, your heart will run wherever it's going to run. In the same way that when it comes to like your diet, for instance, your heart will run wherever it wants to run. That's why it loves junk food, right? I mean, my heart craves McDonald's. It loves McDonald's. It loves everything that they serve on the menu at McDonald's, right? Because it's just comfort food, you know? My heart craves Halloween candy late at night when my kids are asleep. I crave that stuff. Anybody with me on that? Am I the only parent in the room? Huh? Come on now. Yeah. I don't know. You've really been eating a lot of candy there, mister. I don't know where all those wrappers came from, right? My heart craves these kind of things. I want one donut, then two donuts, then three donuts. I crave more and more and more. But here's the thing. I also crave a smaller waistline. I also crave to have clean arteries. I also crave to be in shape. And so there at war is a desire and a desire. And if I don't put discipline somewhere in the mix, you know what's going to happen. I'm always going to go down the route of junk food. And it's no different in your sexuality. If you don't interject discipline somewhere in the midst, your heart will run wild. It will take you in all kinds of places that it shouldn't go. That's why Jesus says, listen, adultery begins in the heart. If you've committed, if you've already thought about it, if you let a fantasy run wild, you've already committed adultery in your heart. And it's only a matter of time before all of a sudden something happens physically. See, it goes like this. It begins with your heart and goes to your thoughts. And then it goes from your thoughts to your actions. So your heart has this fantasy come and go, wow, wouldn't that be awesome? At that point, your mind has to go, no. No, that wouldn't be awesome. We should not be doing that. But if your heart can convince your mind to entertain the thought, okay, your thought will eventually begin to turn to, how can I make this happen? That's what your mind does. It's always trying to find a way to get you what you want. You want candy? I'll find a way to get you candy. You want a donut? I'll find a way to get you a donut. Whatever it is, we'll make it happen, okay? We'll look for some quarters on the couch. We'll get you some donut money some way, somehow. We'll mow lawns, whatever we got to do. We will get you that donut money so you don't spend all the credit cards your wife don't know about it. We will find a way. Amen? Yes. Now, here's the thing. What I'm going to say next is probably one of the most profound and scariest things I'm going to say all morning. Nothing happens without you first thinking it, okay? But we never think our thoughts are evil. We never think our thoughts are evil. We always find a way to whitewash our thoughts, right? You have that fantasy, but then your thought will go, but I didn't do anything. Because I didn't do anything. I didn't do anything wrong. So therefore, this wasn't wrong. It was just a thought. You know, I was just thinking about it. It was just innocent. It was just playful fun. Your mind will always rationalize. As soon as your mind says, hey, I don't think this is right. Nah, it's okay. It's okay. It'll begin to rationalize. And you'll rationalize the thought, and then pretty soon you'll rationalize the action. And say, well, it's okay because my wife did this, or it's okay because my husband's this. And it'll rationalize your actions. Now, the other thing it'll rationalize is when your heart has that thought, discipline comes in and says, no, we can't do this. You know what your heart says back? You're right. We'll do this tomorrow. Tomorrow we won't do this anymore, right? Tomorrow we'll stop. Tomorrow we'll make better decisions. Tomorrow we won't think about this. Tomorrow we won't have lunch with her. Tomorrow we won't have the conversation. Tomorrow we'll take it in for out of work. Tomorrow we won't get the donut. Tomorrow we won't have the conversation. Tomorrow we won't look at the internet. Tomorrow I'll get rid of the software on my computer. Tomorrow I'll delete the file. Tomorrow I'll get rid of Safari. Tomorrow. And it's like hitting a snooze button on your conscience. And your mind is just barely dumb enough to go, oh, okay. As long as you promise we're going to do it tomorrow. Yep, tomorrow we're going to do it. And you know what happens tomorrow? Tomorrow's no longer tomorrow. What is it?
Today.
It's today. Whatever is tomorrow. So tomorrow's today. And today, it's okay. But tomorrow's not okay. So we won't do it tomorrow. And so the lie we tell ourselves to escape discipline is tomorrow. Right now, there may be something on your mind, something on your heart that you know right now you've got to do. You got to do it. For some of you, that's, we'll go to Austin, everybody. If you're single right now, here's your assignment for the week that you need to get on to today. Set your boundaries. What's your boundaries for dating? What's your boundaries? What's your standards? If you don't have boundaries, you don't have your standards, it's going to happen. I mean, whatever you don't want to have happen is going to happen. Pastor Chris says it like this. He says, let me make sure. Unintentional living leads to unintentional results. Unintentional living leads to unintentional results. You don't have a standard in your dating, you don't have boundaries in your dating, you're going to end up with unintentional results. Guaranteed. You need to have a standard, not just have a standard, but tell that to a close friend of yours. And every time you go out on a date, you debrief the date the next day. What'd you guys do? Where'd you go? How'd it play out? What'd you do? Come on, what'd you do? Did you come back to your place? What happened? You've got to have that conversation. If you're not having that conversation, and you live an unintentional life, and you live an unintentional dating life, you're getting unintentional results. Married folks, what are your boundaries and what are your standards in your marriage? What's off limits, what's not okay? Is texting women okay? Are video chats okay? Are sharing a ride home okay? Are eating lunch in the cafeteria together okay? What's okay, what's not okay? You've got to have that conversation. Nobody ever looks back and says, you know, worst decision we made in our marriage was setting up those boundaries. The reality is most people don't set boundaries. And they say, how'd this happen? I don't know. It was just like all of a sudden. My heart was just, you know, attached to her. I don't know, and all of a sudden I woke up one day and I didn't want to be married anymore. Oh, all of a sudden, really? Just happened all of a sudden. It wasn't a series of unintended events that led you to an unintended place. No, it wasn't that at all. No, it was just all of a sudden. No, it wasn't. You made some choices along the way. And you made choices I didn't even realize you were making those choices. To not put in a boundary is a choice. To not set up a standard is a choice. So he says, listen, one day you'll look back and you'll think to yourself, oh, how I hated discipline. Oh, how I hated those standards. Oh, how I hated those boundaries. They were so restrictive. No, they weren't. They were a path to life. He says in the chapter before that, he says, guard your heart. This is Proverbs chapter 4, verse 23. Guard your heart above all else, for it determines the course of your life. When your heart begins to have that fantasy, your mind has got to go, we ain't going there. Nope. Don't even entertain that thought. Don't think about that. Don't go there. Don't look at that. Turn that off. Walk the other way. Because if it doesn't, and you go down that path, the longer your heart goes in that path, it's going to get your mind to go with it. When it gets your mind to go along with it, your mind's going to find a way to get you what you want, and it's not long before your body follows. So just guard your heart. Avoid all perverse talk. Don't even think about this stuff. Don't give voice to this. Don't think it's a joke. We don't joke about affairs. We don't joke about those things with our friends, period. Stay away from corrupt speech, anything that leads you down that path. Instead, look straight ahead. Fix your eyes on what lies before you. Mark out a straight path in your feet. Stay on that path. Don't get sidetracked. Keep your feet from following evil. You need to look at your life and say, this is what I want. This is the kind of marriage I want. What am I going to do to cultivate that? And if you begin to wander and let your mind go anywhere else, it's not long before you jump out of that circle. Just think about that. If you are in here, but your mind is out there, are you in a good place? Eventually, your mind's going to come over here. Eventually. So what's he say instead? In the chapter 5, he says, drink water from your own cistern. Come on, should your springs be overflowing out to the streets? No, let them be yours alone. Never share a bed with strangers. May your fountain always be blessed, and may you rejoice in the life of your youth. Why be intoxicated by another woman? Seriously? All your ways are in full view of the Lord. He sees everything you're doing. For lack of discipline, you will die. For lack of discipline, you will die. Not for lack of desire. Not for lack of intention. Not for lack of want to. Nobody ever wants to make a mess of their life. They just aren't disciplined enough to make better decisions. So, you got two assignments today. One is if you're single, set your boundaries and your standards. If you're married, set your boundaries and standards for marriage. Second of all, you need to read through Psalm 51 and pray that through with God. Anybody here ever committed any kind of sexual sin whatsoever? Anybody? 4, 5, 6, 8, 10? If you committed adultery in your mind, you ever had any fantasy in your mind? Okay, anybody else? Okay, we've got about 20 honest people in the room. The rest of you are in complete denial beyond any hope or perseverance of pulling you back in. Come on, seriously. If you don't think you have any kind of problem with this, you already gone. Once again, anybody in here commit any kind of sexual sin? Thank you. If you think it in your mind, you've already gone too far, period. It is a sin. When did all of a sudden happen? All y'all are like, oh, it was way back in the early point. It was back before you even thought about something. You were just in the wrong place. Oh, but I haven't committed any sexual sins. I haven't done anything wrong. Nope, never even had a thought. Come on. In Psalm 51, you'll read the brokenness of David, where he says, create in me a clean heart, O God, and renew in me a steadfast spirit. He's saying, I need to recapture my heart and get it purified. And once again, move back to a disciplined spirit where I'm going on the right path and I'm committed to it. Let's pray. Father, as we finish out our time, may we humble ourselves and admit our sins so that you don't have to humble us in a way of full public disgrace. Because, Father, everything done in private is meant to become public. So Father, give us the vision and the wisdom to confess this and make it public on our own terms. We might be healed and find your grace. Second of all, Lord, maybe you just do away with the whole notion that tomorrow we're going to make a change. Make a change today. For some in here, something needs to be deleted. It's software that needs to be added to the computer for monitoring. It's a phone number of a person that needs to get deleted. It's a habit that needs to be changed. It's a relational focus that needs to be renewed. May that happen today, Father, before the sun sets. We may not hit the snooze button on our alarm, we're conscious right now. In Jesus' name we pray.
Thank you for listening to the Essential Church Podcast. Let me encourage you to pause for a moment and reflect on what you've heard. It's not the hearing of the word, but the application that makes all the difference.